If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
The yogurt shop murders have been solved at long last. After 34 years, authorities have named Robert Eugene Brashears as the lone perpetrator and the murders of Jennifer and Sarah Harbinson, Eliza Thomas, Amy Ayers. And thanks to advanced DNA testing, ballistic forensics, and genealogy-led investigation, they got their guy. He's dead, but they got their guy. The press conference acknowledged not just the solve, but the systematic failures, the lives derailed by false confessions, and the emotional toll on the surviving families. We're going to go through that press conference today. It was taking place just yesterday, as of our recording, on the 29th of September of 2025. And a lot of reflection, 34 years of not having an answer to this, and then suddenly, oh, wow. We got it. And the pieces of evidence, I mean, they've been sitting there for quite some time. It just really took someone to take certain pieces and test them certain ways and match them against certain things. And boom, you got your guy. I think that's what's an interesting piece of this whole story is just how much of that information is sitting out there in filing cabinets and evidence lockers from decades and decades ago, and how many people are still incarcerated or dead for crimes maybe they did not commit, where real evidence is sitting out there. That's something that I think this this case is making a lot of people wonder about. Todd Michaels, Stacey Cole, all with us today to go through all this. What's your thoughts as now, shortly after this documentary drops, suddenly another case solved? Amazing, huh?
Amazing what science can do, isn't it? You know, it's the DNA. I see a lot of people disputing, well, that DNA is junk science and things like that. But it's interesting. Have you guys done any of the genetic analysis testing, 23andMe, Ancestry, any of that stuff?
I have.
You did? You really did?
Yeah. I did the kit a long time ago. Did you, Stacey?
I did. I did 23andMe. And it's interesting because when you look at it and you parse through the results, things start making sense. Like, I contacted some relatives that I maybe knew existed, but it put me in touch with them. we started comparing notes. You can sit there and say it's junk science, but a lot of it is pretty spot on.
Well, what's junk science about it? What do you mean people are saying it's junk science?
There's a lot of commentary out there. The Reddits, let's just talk about Reddit for a second. A lot of people saying, oh, this, it's not accurate. You know, this is all just, again, junk science. And I just don't think it is.
That's,
I think we've
junk
learned
thinking.
So much through DNA.
it's just people throwing stupid shit out of their mouths that mean nothing.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's like, it's I don't like it. It's junk.
And that's what it is. They probably found out that Dad, on his little business trip, had a little something going on, and now they've got a stepbrother.
Well, that's an interesting thing with the DNA technology is, and the IgG. I read some stat recently where even if you haven't taken these tests, there's like 97% of the population that's accounted for now in it. You don't need to have taken it. Like your cousin takes it. Yes. And a couple others, and it all just kind of triangulates everything in different ways that can, you know, yep, pretty much lay out what genetics are. People don't like facts. People don't like learning something that, you know, that maybe grandma didn't want you to know, or your mom didn't want you to know, or whoever didn't want you to know. They can't hide from that shit anymore.
No, you can't. And what it did for me is it let me know where I was on the diabetic scale, and the diabetic
really?
Scale is what I call it. Mm-hmm. But it showed me all of my relatives who do have diabetes, which is interesting, or at least a predisposition for it. And it made me start paying attention, and I changed my diet. I went and got myself checked and went, whoa, there's some stuff happening here. And I reeled it in. Had I not done that test, I probably would have maybe been 2 or 3 years down the road finding out some things. So for me, it was a wake-up call because of how accurate it was. It told me, hey, girl, you're heading down a bad road. And it nailed it before my actual medical test really stepped in and did that. We didn't test for any of this stuff because I didn't fit the model yet. But I saw it in the 23andMe and thought, well, maybe I should look into this and get my A1C checked. Sure as shit, it was off the scale. Like, you need to do something. So it wasn't junk science to me.
I didn't know that that did that in the 23andMe, that it went into like biology of
there's
disease.
The health aspect.
The health aspect of it. Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that in mind. I did Ancestry. This was a couple of years ago, so I have no idea what they're doing today. And it was more so you have X percentage from this portion of the world and X percentage from that portion of the world, and that's what it really lined out for me. And then it's always interesting when you start to see the genetic matches of this person is matching as X percent of like a cousin or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And you have no idea who the person is.
Yeah.
I'm just blown away that thanks to 23andMe, Stacy's still with us because she changed and it gave her the meat stick diet is what she went on. So I'm just,
glad.
Yeah, me too. I'm thankful for
23andMe said eat meat sticks and hide knives around your house.
Which, by the way, Tony, just so you know, we figured out how many did you say you had? 5 or 6? And she's only got 4 plus
5.
One. Yeah, 4 in the around the apartment and 1 in your purse.
Yes.
All right. Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, if somebody decides to come in or, you know, accost me in my bathroom, my bedroom, my living room, kitchen, or if I have my purse on me, you better look out. I'm ready to roll.
Am I wrong? But aren't the stats on that, like your odds of it getting used against you are pretty high if you have it like that readily available? Can
yes,
I add another layer of paranoia to this?
Remember, I've been training. I train with plastic knives and
true
battering sticks. So yeah, I've been training. So yes, the odds of it being used against you if you're not trained are pretty damn high, but I also know how to get at least one or two good cuts in and one giant stab. I mean, I've been practicing this for...
Before they get you, so you can get...
Correct. So you can get away. The point is, get one really good jab in so you can get away.
Oh, okay.
It's all about training. Muscle memory. It really does sound crazy, but being a single woman living on a ground floor apartment... No, that's what I need to do to feel safe.
Doesn't sound crazy at all, Stacey.
Thank you. I know. You guys are like making me think I sound nuts, no, but you know what? I don't have
six knives in every different room. That sounds normal. Yeah.
Ladies, chime in. Tell me I'm not nuts. Come on. Get in our comment section on YouTube and tell the boys how it is.
Get
if
three
I'm
cuts
nuts,
in
I'll
and
go
you're
seek
fine.
Help.
Yeah.
But you got to get three cuts. I mean, I'm all about the training, and I think that's great that you are getting the training on it. Otherwise,
me too, honestly.
Otherwise, it's not a great idea to have six knives in different locations around the house.
I don't believe anybody should have a weapon if they haven't trained with it.
I mean,
because
Cheryl
the
Crow
weapon
says,
will do you no good if it's turned on you.
So did
but
you have
you
the
know
knife?
What you're doing?
Did you have the knives around the house before you had the training?
No.
Okay. Well, good. There you go.
No. No, just like steak knives and things. But no, I would never.
She did.
We She's all have steak it. Knives.
You are.
I don't, but that's okay.
Who doesn't have a steak knife, you guys?
Well, yes, but would you? Of course we have steak knives, but did you have them strategically located around the house, not in the steak knife drawer?
No, I did not. They
okay, there's
the
difference.
In the utensil drawer.
All right.
Okay.
So it's the only weapon I had. But I have firearms, and I shoot them on a regular basis to make sure that I'm competent.
Yeah,
proficient.
I agree. Yeah, if you're going to use any weapon, you should know how to use it.
Correct. And one of the beautiful things about the martial arts that I'm training in, it's called Kali. It's a Filipino martial art. Anything can be used as a weapon. Even my purse strap, the way I carry it now, I string it across my body. So if somebody wants to come at me, what I do is I bring them in closer and put the strap around their neck and choke them.
When you're walking around Wausau Center Mall that no longer exists, are you just kind of sitting there like by the Auntie Anne's, theoretically, if it was still there,
the
going,
pretzel?
I got my purse. If that person gets the cheese dip and approaches me with it.
Always.
I ever can use those lines as a pickup line, Stacey? You know, I can choke you with this purse strap. Something
well,
like that.
Actually, a very good friend of mine is very well trained in jiu-jitsu and a couple of other martial arts. And we've like put each other in chokeholds. So, you know, we all have our kinks.
Is that what the kids are calling it these days?
Yes.
Jeez.
But come on, ladies, would you chime in here? I am not crazy. This it goes back to the would you choose the bear or the guy that can you know shows up in the woods? I would always choose the bear. I don't trust a lot of men. It
I think
life
the bear
experience.
Is pretty much a guaranteed death sentence. I think you may have some odds with the man. Statistically
ladies.
Speaking, statistically speaking,
yeah, Stacey, you would because you've you know trained right.
So yeah.
I don't know.
/ stab. Have you ever watched? Have you ever seen? What was the one where the guy gets eaten by the bear? Grizzly
bear.
Man.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I think it's different if you're a man because when you go out in public, when you go to the store, when you're coming home at night, when you're walking from your garage to your you know front door. See, thank you. Someone just chimed in. We are always sizing up our environment.
And that's good. It's good to be aware.
But I don't know that men do that on a regular basis. If
I don't
I'm
think a lot of men
somewhere,
do.
I'm always looking around for that potential danger scenario. And I don't know that you guys do the same.
I do. But I'm paranoid.
Well, that and I never leave my house, so there's nothing to size
true.
Up.
You know?
So, and I don't do much of that either anymore either. So, no, I do. I mean, and that's, look, I think there's certainly healthy levels and there's unhealthy levels of anything. And being aware is good. There is an unhealthy level of being.
Correct.
That gets to paranoia and it gets to very unhealthy thinking. But being healthily aware and prepared is certainly a good thing. I've been like that since I was a kid. Talking last night on Real Ghost Stories Online, it's like everything goes back to Tony's childhood trauma at some point.
It plays a role.
It does. All of our trauma plays a role in everything. So, I mean, it plays a role in the way we think about things and how we interpret things and how we run things through our minds and all that. So, I can trace mine all the way back to childhood, and I can remember my mom working at the mall. And at that point in time in the 90s, there was a woman who was abducted named Lori Deppis. Do you remember this, Todd?
I absolutely.
Yep. And she actually, she also was our waitress at a restaurant called Scenario. Remember the Scenario?
Absolutely.
That we used to go to. I think we used to actually win gift certificates probably from you, on the radio.
Probably.
Not even kidding. I think we did. And my parents did. And so I knew this woman, and then she's abducted, and I don't think they've ever found her.
No,
I don't
think they haven't.
It's still like, I want to do a cold case piece on that story. Yeah. Like I want to dig into that story. I think that would be very, very fascinating.
I just want to say, Stacey, and please understand, I'm just giving you hell. I think it's great that you are prepared. I think it's great that you've learned all this stuff. But when somebody tells you, well, I've got five knives stashed around, it's just something to play a little fun with. So don't take offense to me giving you some hell about it.
Of course not. No, and I appreciate that, because on the surface, it really does sound fucking crazy.
What does your therapist say about having five knives around the house?
Oh, she loves it. She loves it. She, because it's empowerment. It's okay. Saying, and again, I would not have these in this place if I weren't trained to use them. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a black belt or anything, sure. But I'm doing my best to climb the ladder here and learn new things so that God forbid something does happen. Mm-hmm. I can get in some really good swipes. Whereas anybody else might have that freeze where they're like, oh my God, somebody's assaulting me.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to react that way because I have trained for that moment that I'm going to get some shots in where that person's going to be like, holy shit, this woman knows some stuff, and they might turn tail and run.
It makes sense. No, I mean,
don't
I think
know until you're in that scenario, but
you don't.
We train for that so that you don't freeze in that moment because people have not, you're not practicing being assaulted.
Yeah.
People don't know what that feels like. So you're terrified and your body freezes up. When you train for this, you've seen this scenario and you know how to react.
It's muscle memory.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the disclaimer on it. It's not just put a bunch of weapons around your house and suddenly it's all going to work out well. That's actually going to increase your odds of getting killed. But unless you know what you're doing with
correct.
Them, unless you are trained in them.
Barbara Miller just said difference. That she's got stuff in her purse, bedstand, top drawer, baseball bat at the front door, concealed knives. I imagine a lot of the women who are chiming in have a reason that they've done this. You know, maybe there's something in our past where you've been attacked and you realize that's not going to happen to me again. I'm going to be ready next time.
But you have to be ready.
And trained.
Yes. And you can't just tell yourself you're ready. And that's the important thing of it. It's not just, this is here and now I'm safer. It's like having any weapons, like having a gun. I don't know how to use the gun. Well, then you're not safer because the gun is there. You're actually more at risk of you screwing this up and being used. And that's the part that so many miss. And that's the key point.
I'm a huge advocate for women taking self-defense. I think it's really important.
Oh, yeah.
And not just one class and go, okay, I'm good. Over and over, maybe go find a kickboxing class so that, you know, you can get in some cardio, meet some great women, that kind of thing. But learn how to just plant one really ginormous kick on somebody, because that kick might give you enough time to get away.
Well, I mean, could you imagine if like in our school systems, if we had, if we put an emphasis on that sort of training for young women as we do on football and everything. And I'm not knocking football, as I say it very disparagingly. Right. But if we put some emphasis on actual life skills that people can use beyond the age of 18 for 99.99999% of the population, oh my gosh, how much more prepared would these people be for the world? Why would we ever want to prepare our high school students for becoming real life adults? What an idea. But if we actually did train them, I mean, not only in that, not only just in self-defense, but let's get a little more in depth and just about being emotionally mature, about understanding psychology, about understanding other human beings and being secure in ourselves. And we put some emphasis on our brains and that sort of stuff. The things that actually matter in life, not just getting a ball in a hole.
Correct.
I don't know. Maybe we'd be a little bit better. But that teaches teamwork. Sure, it does. But you know what? This teaches how to fucking interact with human beings.
It does. And it also teaches self-confidence. And I think that's where a lot of our society has fallen down. People don't feel confident. So what they're doing is they're going into these dark places and finding camaraderie where they didn't really need to go. Yeah. Maybe if you felt better about yourself when you looked in the mirror and felt like, I can do whatever I want to do and be confident in my life and go do things, maybe I don't need to join a cult.
Well, I'm a big proponent of cults. I think it's a good idea.
You know you are.
Oh, my gosh.
I think, you know, everyone should find a cult that they like. And incidentally, I'm starting one. So if you'd like to join a cult.
Todd, can you mute his mic at all?
Well, I'm thinking between him talking about how great cults are and me giving you hell for defending yourself, everybody's going to hate us at the end of this podcast. So
we're getting a lot of great comments
Absolutely.
From what I'm seeing.
Yes.
So my ladies have come forward and been
they have.
This is why.
Stacey's got a crew. Yep.
It's a trauma response, though, in a lot of ways. It is playing defense. I mean, you can look at it as offense, but you're really, at the end of the day, you're playing defense. And it's not like you have a choice in the matter. This is the world that we live in. Just because, you know, I say it'd be lovely if we could maybe go to the offense and But that's a systematic change. That's where an institution needs to change the way that we raise children and the way that we educate people. And until that changes, everybody's playing defense. And that seems to be where we've found our happy spot, quote unquote. But really, at the end of the day, you just keep playing more and more defense if we're never going to actually look at why we're playing defense and maybe start an offense to begin with. And then we don't have to defend ourselves against unhealthy, emotionally unregulated people that have very poor problem solving skills.
Well, and we focus on a lot of those people here. A lot of our cases.
We wouldn't have a show without it.
The worst case scenario.
So back all this up. We don't want people to be well.
Okay, fuck that. Yeah. Don't go for emotional intelligence. Just instantly react to shit and encourage more people to have six knives around their homes and constantly living in fear. No, I mean, obviously we don't want that. But it's... It is a societal shift, and I get it. And so, look, I'm giving you shit too, but I understand where you're coming from. I mean, going back to my story of back then, my mom had to leave the she worked at the JCPenney in the catalog section. Remember when there was a catalog section at Penny's?
Yep.
And she would be there late at night, and then she'd walk out to her car, you know, and often by herself in the dark parking lot, 9-10 o'clock at night. And it scared the living shit out of me. And my mom was a fairly paranoid person too, a fairly anxious person. So it didn't like really not play into it because I wasn't necessarily sheltered from these news stories, and I'm fine with that. I mean, look, it's worked out fine, right?
for all of us.
Yes, but I was hyper aware of the darkness of society, I think, at a younger age. And look, I mean, good or bad, it is what it is. I think young people need to be more aware. Maybe not to an extreme. There's certainly, again, there's balance to all this. There's extreme and then there's like oblivious. I feel like we're either in utter oblivious land or you're hiding six knives around your house. And there's not, we need more of the middle to be healthy. And we don't have that. So, I mean, I was paranoid as shit. My anxiety was through the roof every single night that she would be coming home and, you know, is she home safe and all that. I'm an only child. I mean, and my dad is the most passive person in the world. It's fine. What are you worried about? Stop worrying. It's fine. You know, and I wish I could adopt that at some days of my life. And she was the opposite. So, That totally screwed with me. Then there was another girl that disappeared that same summer, I think. She was out riding her bike in the country, like where I like to go ride my bike in the country. And I forgot what her name was. Do you remember this story?
I don't remember that one, no.
It was like right around the same time.
Right.
But there was a lot. There was a lot of people disappearing in our area right at that moment. And it was traumatizing. It was. I mean, I knew these people greatly by any means. I knew the one a little bit, but not much. But it was like, oh shit, this stuff really happens. And so that has always made me probably more aware than most men, I guess. I don't walk into any situation thinking, I'm a guy, I have a penis, I will win. You know, I don't. I mean, there's plenty of people out there that are far stronger and, you know how to use violence far more than I do, because I've never been in a fight in my life physically. So, but it does make you more aware of your surroundings. When I'm in a theater, I'm always looking where the exits are going to be. In a crowd, I'm always looking. I'm always hyper aware. Good, bad, I don't know. At this day and age, I think it's probably not a bad thing. Maybe it was a little over the top years earlier. I don't know so much today.
I, you know, if you're paying attention to the news, if you're paying attention to the school shootings, the mall shootings, the theater shootings at, you know, whatever, because they're all over now.
Yeah.
Grocery store. It's hard not to walk into those places and look around. If you see somebody who's acting strangely, it brings to mind, are they going to do something? Whereas before it was like, oh, look at that's just a weirdo. Well, now we wonder what's under their coat. What, you know, why are they looking at me funny? It just, our pattern of thought has changed based on what we've seen.
And it doesn't help when you're dismissed for having concern. And that's something I've seen. When I was in, Branson several years ago. Last time I was at the movie theater there. Went in to see something, sat down in the back row because I wanted to make out with who I was with, you know, and just get out. No, I'm kidding.
You have to go to the back row.
I like sitting in the back row of movie theaters. I do. It's just better center back. You get a nice, see the screen. It's good. Anyway, just sitting back there. And like about 20 minutes into the movie, some guy comes in there, super baggy clothes, sits down. It's like, it was kind of past the point where someone's getting in late for the movie. It's like, why are you coming into this movie at this point? You've missed like at least a quarter of it. Sits down. He's acting really fidgety, really suspicious. You can't tell what the fuck's underneath this guy's giant hoodie and whatever he has on. And all I'm thinking is this thing's going to get shot up. And he's like, looks like he's kind of casing the joint the way he's looking around. I don't know. There's a lot of meth around Branson. Maybe at the end of the day, that's what it was. The theater did not get shot up. But I did walk out of there and walked over to the manager and said, I don't know what, there's a guy that just walked in the movie late. This is weird. I feel very uncomfortable. I don't know what's going on. He's acting kind of odd. I mean, I don't know what to do, but I'm letting you know. Oh, it's fine. Came into the movie late. I said, but he's acting weird. He's moving in ways that are not normal for someone just watching a movie. Yeah, it's fine. Just go back, watch. Just like literally totally dismiss the whole fucking, not even like, oh, let me get security and let me, or like, let's have, just have somebody go in and have your security person watch. Have the security person just observe from afar. Just something.
Do they have security?
They did. There was actually security on prem. The off duty officers, I think, they rented them, to come in and do it. But no, they were too busy, you know, over at the kettle corn stand at the front of the building, you know, don't want to disturb that. And there's also the image too of, well, we don't want to, you know, portray that this could be going on in our community. Yeah. Well, you might need to before something horrible happens. I was so taken aback at just how dismissed I was at that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't overreacting. I was just trying to see something, say something. And nothing was done. And I left. I never watched the rest of the movie. I just got the hell out of there. Left a really shitty Yelp review. And
I'm sorry that you weren't taken seriously. I mean, that's really sad because you were being a good citizen. And, and who knows, maybe he wasn't up to anything. But we don't know that.
There's so much drug use in that area and in the sticks right outside of, and it's such a depressed town. I mean, look, Branson, you go in summer and there's fun, nice aspects of it. But there's a quarter of the year where there's nobody coming and going and there's no employment. And literally half of those motels people call home. And there's rampant drug use everywhere. It was like literally scary, like walking into the Taco Bell at some point, shortly thereafter. That was the theater was the last straw for me. 'Cause it felt like any place I was going, almost any restaurant, any place, there was people that were so methed out, it was like The Walking Dead.
Ew.
And it was, and you had, I had two little girls, and it was just like, this is just, I'm good. And then even going to like the local district, and because they were in public schools, and then going to some of those events too, it was like, shit. It's like so many of these parents are all methed out too. And it was just, it was enough for me to say, we're moving, and then got the hell out of there. Not a place I would live ever again.
Yuck.
But again, just kind of scary. And again, see something, say something. Being aware is half the battle. But again, if you know, the zombies are overwhelming, you're not going to win that battle. So it was kind of spooky. So anyway, there we go. Well, I'm glad we've established the keeping of knives with training.
With training, do not have them if you don't know how to use them. But I've seen a numerous, well, I guess a lot of comments in our section. Yeah. A lot of women saying, yeah, right on. That's exactly what I do. So
yeah.
Sorry, guys, you're outnumbered.
Well, I think if more predators were aware of this, maybe there'd be less people doing shit. Although predators don't seem to ever get held back by possible repercussions. That's the problem with that. It's just, yeah. Well, let's start getting into the yogurt shop murders, where, you know, it would have been wonderful if, you know, some of these young ladies at the time, you know, had they had some sort of training, had there been some sort of thought on their own self-defense, would it have ended that way? It's, I think it's a fair question to ask and to think about when we put our young people out there in the world. I'm going to note this. We're going to have to change the front title on the first segment here.
Kind of figured.
We kind of went off topic a little bit, so...
Us? Well, Off topic?
I'll send an adjustment on that one. but on this part, let's watch some of the press conference from yesterday, and we'll break it down a little bit more about what was discussed and how they came to this this conclusion after 34 years. Let's watch.
Over three decades after a horrible crime took the lives of four teenage girls and changed Austin forever, our hearts have healed. They're still broken. Finally, we have an answer. I'm joined today by our city manager, T.C. Broadnax, and deputy city manager, John Fortune.
After 34 years, the Austin police have made a significant breakthrough in this case. We now have evidence linking a specific individual to this case, Robert Eugene Brashers. The only physical evidence located at that scene has been matched to him. Their commitment demonstrates the will to never give up and what it means to seek justice and to seek truth. And their work will have a ripple effect across this country when they assist with other investigations.
This case wouldn't be where it is today. There wasn't recognition to everyone, police from different agencies across the country. The days after the shop caught on fire, as you can see, it appears to be just, you know, your everyday middle America retail space in a strip mall. The girls were found tied up with their own clothing as ligatures and bindings. There was evidence of sexual assault. All four have been shot in the head with a .22 caliber pistol. And Amy was also shot with a .380 pistol. And then the building was set on fire before the suspect left the scene. Some of the only physical evidence that was recovered was a spent .380 shell casing that was located in the floor drain. There was one confession from a juvenile named Maurice Pierce. 8 days after the murders, Pierce was at North Cross Mall, which was down the street from the yogurt shop, and he's with his friend named Forrest Wellburn. He was carrying a .22 pistol in his waistband. He was 16 at the time, and he was arrested for the possession of the pistol and taken down to the homicide office, where he was interrogated for several hours by Detective Hector Polanco. The ballistics on the .22, to see if it would try to match it with the fragments from the murder scene, were inconclusive at best. There was never any physical evidence linking them to the yogurt shop. a landmark Supreme Court case comes out called Crawford v. Washington. It reformulated what hearsay statements can be admitted in criminal cases under the Sixth Amendment. In 2018, the unknown Y profile was resubmitted for retesting because there have been technological advancements. I inherited the case in June of 2022. I spent the first few months sort of reviewing it. And one of the first things I did was I met the group of subject matter experts on DNA and genealogy. And we sat around a round table. I don't know what made me go down that rabbit hole that morning, but I did. And I'm glad I did. What I found was that it had not been submitted into the NIBIN system in many years. NIBIN is a National Integrated Ballistic Information Network. It's kind of like CODIS for shell casings. The original ballistics report said that in all probability, the weapon used from that 380 projectile was limited to an AMT brand backup model 380 handgun that was used to kill Amy. So we kind of sat down and decided, well, what are we going to do next? How are we going to solve these cases together, assuming they are related? So they had some items that could be submitted and retested, including a sexual assault kit. We reached out to all of the labs in the country that do YSTR typing and asked if they can manually search against our unknown profile. And we got a match. The South Carolina State Lab was the only lab in the country that responded that they had a match, quote, match, to our unknown YSTR, Robert Eugene Brashers. He is a perfect 27 for 27 match to our unknown profile in Yogurt Shop. So this particular Y profile is very rare. They had never really seen it before, and their population statistics estimated that it's only 0.12% of the U.S. population. So now we're getting somewhere that, you know, we're building a case here that this is Brashers, but still 0.12%. We need to be at 100%, but we're getting there. He's starting to look better and better. It wasn't until 2018, the very sort of infancy of genetic genealogy, that these detectives, some of them are here today, got together and collaborated. How are we going to identify this guy? And in 2018, that DNA testing confirmed that all of those unsolved up there were all from Mr. Robert Brashers. So he's good for the sexual assaults and murders throughout the 90s that he never had to stand trial for. The guy even faked his own obituary and put it in the newspaper to establish an identity. Her mom would ask her to call the dad by a different name at times. So we start researching this guy on our end. You know, how is he related to our case? So we looked into this guy a little further, ran his plate, and it showed to be a stolen car out of Georgia. It was said stolen on November 29th. During this interaction, he was also in possession of a 380 pistol. It's not necessarily unique to one individual, like autosomal STRs used in CODIS. STRs are passed down paternally. So me and my brother have the same YSTR profile, unless there's some sort of mutation. But we're trying to figure out how to get from we're pretty sure it's him to we know it's him. This was going to be pushing all of our chips on the table with this. This was going to be the last shot effort. One of the things we retested was Amy's fingernail clippings from the autopsy. He controlled four women alone, tied them up, and sexually assaulted one of them in 1997 in Memphis. And I'm sorry that it took 34 years for us to get here, but we're here now. And, you know, Amy's final moments on this earth were to solve this case for us because of her fighting back. Thank you.
Austin Forensic Science and Austin Police have been actively working together, sometimes daily and hourly lately, along with dozens of partner agencies, forensic laboratories, and nationally renowned subject matter experts. Thanks to the due diligence of South Carolina, we finally had the missing forensic piece, a known suspect, Anna's DNA reference sample. Given the totality, the consistency, and the strength of these data, I am confident in the update that we're providing to you today.
There was no physical evidence tying them to the crime. Mr. Scott confessed after an 18-hour interrogation. Mr. Springsteen confessed after a 5-hour interrogation, and both confessions implicated the other two boys. Both later recanted their confessions and said they were false and coerced. In 2009, DNA testing found biological evidence that did not match any of the four boys. And on the eve of retrial, their cases were dismissed pending further investigation by the Travis County District Attorney's Office.
Let's pause for a second.
So much time.
Because that's a big piece of this case is the false confessions.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk with Bob Mata about that in just a little bit, about false confessions and how they're brought up and how once one says those words aloud, no matter what type of pressure may be on one to say those words aloud, it's set in stone then. It's, well, you said it. You said it. And they keep going back to it no matter what. He said he confessed. He confessed. He said he confessed. And we never take a closer look, or we quite often in the past don't take, and still to this day don't always take a closer look at the context to it. Well, how did he confess? What kind of confession was that? Was this someone where you locked a person in a box and tortured them for a year and then they finally confessed while they were eating their own poop, like Richard Allen in the Delphi murders? Was this you took some youths who had, some problems that were going on in their lives and pressured them and threatened them and made them say that they did it? That's a fascinating one in this case, because it happened within the course of hours. I mean, we're talking like 18 hours of interrogation, wearing someone down and eventually getting these confessions and false memories. But that's a scary thing, because I think when you look at the false confessions that some of these kids gave, they almost started to believe it. They started to believe they were just not remembering things correctly, and that these officers were helping pull those memories out. And then they stated them in those interviews. After walking away, they walked back going, wait a second, I'm not sure about that. But that's a weird thing to think about. I mean, how does that hit you guys, of the idea that, do you think someone could get a false confession out of you if you were in these guys' shoes and you were accused of being there that night and you weren't and you didn't kill them, but you got a system that is just hounding you and you're that young? Young and dumb, as everybody is, and they're hounding you and pushing you the way that they did. Do you think that you could have ended up being one of them and confessing to something that you did not do?
Todd, what do you think?
Oh, I was going to wait for you to go first.
Let's go back to you. I need to think about this a little bit.
It's tough because you want to say, well, I would never confess to something that I didn't do, especially murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Essay and all that kind of stuff. But then you watch the video of the interrogations, and we only saw bits and pieces of it. We watched it here on the show. But you could see little by little their confidence in themselves going away because of the way they were treated, because of the way the interrogation went, the questions, all that kind of stuff. And then you start to go, God, would I start thinking, hey, maybe I did do something, or maybe there's a lapse of memory here.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he know so much about something that I supposedly did and I don't? And also, I just want to throw this out there. We're brought up to respect law enforcement.
Correct.
So if a law enforcement officer is sitting there telling you that this is what happened, this is kind of what it looks like, and you're being implicated on this, it's, There's a good portion of me that goes, well, why wouldn't I trust what this person's telling me? Even especially, if I don't remember it, but if this guy's telling me it, it's got to be true.
Especially back then.
Yes.
It was not the client. I mean, and people who are younger going, well, weird. I mean, it was different. They were called officer friendly, is what we called the police officers. And they came to our schools. And if you saw them on the street, they'd give you baseball cards.
Yes.
And it was, they actually understood that having good PR and having relationships with the community was important, and they shouldn't look like a military force coming in and invading your town. It does kind of tend to push people away, just saying. But it was a very different time. And so, yeah, exactly. You would be thinking, well, I should trust these people. Like, why would I not? I mean, and then, well, there are such things as false memories and or blocking things out. And I think that's kind of what they were trying to do with these kids, is tell them, well, you blocked it out. It was too traumatic. You blocked it out. So I'm going to fill in the blanks. And our brains are good at filling in blanks.
Yep.
Remember in sitcoms in, you know, I'm dating myself a little bit, back in the 80s, amnesia was a thing. Remember right. that? If you hit your head.
And also soap operas, right? Everybody yes, had amnesia yes, in soap yes. operas.
All these characters that would suddenly, you know, they get whacked on the head and their entire lives, they can't remember anything. You know, and quicksand was something that we had to worry about. So we believe this crap, mm-hmm. this absolute crap that, well, maybe I don't remember what really happened. And mm-hmm. so they can get into your psyche and make you question yourself, especially after 18 hours. You're tired. You want to sleep. You want to eat. You probably maybe they let you go to the bathroom, but not as often as you need to. You're probably nervous as hell. Probably mm-hmm. have like explosive diarrhea. I mean, good grief. This is not an ideal scenario to get the truth out of somebody. This is traumatic. So, of course, they're going to say what they need to say to get the fuck out of there.
And then the interrogators can check their box and say, see, I got it.
Yeah.
One of the investigators on this case, and I don't have their name in front of me, but he was known as someone that he's got the perfect batting average, 10 out of 10. He's getting the confessions out of people.
Was that Hector Polanco?
I think so. Yeah, I think it was Hector. And great. Sounds lovely on paper, but if you're, not everybody has a confession to give.
Right.
That's the thing. But that was overlooked because, and I think Hector thought he was getting actual confessions. Do you think he
really thought those were confessions, or he was yep. just going for the, you believe that?
I think he thought he was getting confessions. I think he thought his tactics were breaking these people down enough to the raw data that's coming out of them. And that must be true, because if it was, because he's using his own, you know, self as a guide. Cause if I didn't do that, I wouldn't confess to it. These people, why would they confess to it if they didn't do it? And that's the thinking I think a lot of people have. Not everybody is of the same ilk or of the same strength or of the same character that they would be able to withstand that sort of mental torture and not come out saying something that is not true. Some people can. Some people are going to sit there and like, no, you're never going to get me to say it. Keep wasting your time. I'll sit here till I pass out. But even if I'm passed out, I'm not waking up and still going, yeah, I did it. Not everybody has that. Everybody's different. What they did is they took some kids and they basically beat it out of them. They didn't like physically beat them, but they mentally beat this out of them. And they would not take no for an answer. They wouldn't simply accept, maybe you just got the wrong guys. And that's a dangerous way of doing any sort of investigation. But it's the narrow-minded focus of, you know, you got to get to your goal. The public, there's the pressure. They want the answers here. And they couldn't give them to them. And honest to God, at that point in time, there was no way of figuring out who this was. Yeah. We didn't have the DNA technology. We did not have it. So unless you caught the guy and he confessed to it, there really was no way of doing it. All this is a result of technology that came about decades after the actual murders took place. So that's how we got there. Let's watch a little bit more of the press conference from yesterday. And this, I should note too, this was like a 2-hour press conference. We've minimized it down to kind of the greatest hits, so you can see the big portions of it.
Time has passed, but it is never too late for justice. And the families of Amy, Jennifer, Eliza, and Sarah so deserve justice.
Their courage and leadership to address this need for resources in Texas shows what can be accomplished if we are willing to break down walls and collaborate for the benefit of victims and their loved ones. In 2017, I was called into one of my first meetings as the first assistant district attorney with then Travis County District Attorney Margaret Moore. It was to meet with Bob and Pam Ayers and Sean and Angie Ayers, family of Amy Ayers.
She'd been tragically murdered in the yogurt shop murders. And I remembered the case well, since I'd lived in Austin since 1976 and grown up in Northwest Hills near the yogurt shop. I was so incredibly honored and humbled and proud to be entrusted with an important case such as this one. The AG's Cold Case and Missing Persons Unit was created to support law enforcement agencies across the state with their unsolved homicide investigations. They have never stopped following leads, testing evidence, and trying to seek the truth. He used ligatures to tie up his victims, often their clothing. He used a firearm, most often a .380 or a .22, with gunshot wounds to the head of his victims. He sexually assaulted his victims, often young girls. And sometimes, as we've seen, he set fire to the crime scenes.
Vengeance was never it. It was always the truth. And I'm here to really talk about the police department and how involved and supportive they have been from the very beginning. 10 years ago, my mom died. 10 years ago, my mom died. I went to the cemetery on Hancock to fill out the paperwork. And the clerk behind the desk, when she looked up the location of my mom's plot, paused. And then she said, "I've lived in Austin for so long. Please know that your family has always been in my prayers. We have been robbed of a life with nieces and nephews and grandchildren and with sisters to grow old with. This sort of mindless violence continues to steal from all of us. I don't yet know how this information is going to change my life, but what I learned about myself in the past 2 days is that my brain was split in two. One part of my brain has been screaming.
At one point, I'd given up on God, but he never gave up on me, and I am thankful for that. The world needing more Mindy Mumfords. The result you see today is when you have an army of people working together to reach a common goal, not for themselves, but for the victims and their families. Thank you to all of you." She went to work. She started making phone calls to everyone that would listen, and the ones that didn't listen, she made them. She was a thorn in the side of many detectives, but she eventually gained the respect of all of them. This day, I was never sure was going to get here. This chapter will close soon, but we're just getting started. You will see.
When Sean asked me to fight for justice, I said, "How far do you want me to push?" And he said, "As far as you can." That lit a fire in me that I had never experienced in my life. And I say this to all the other family victims out there. Keep going. You will get knocked down, but get back up with a vengeance. Do not take no when your gut is telling you to push. Do not give up. Fight for what is right. He was warned against how intense and passionate I was in order to help this case. He never wavered. He was willing to put all of his ego aside and do what was right for the girls. She has set the bar for cold case units and missing persons units in Texas, and together, we will be forming a foundation to further advance law enforcement agencies and cold cases around the country. Open the cold case boxes, please. Put the evidence in the databases. Run the rape kits. Do not wait. Do it today. You could help ease someone's pain. We have got to do better for the victims. I would like to ask President Trump for a conversation to help fix this broken system. I am glad I was able to keep my word. I was able to help you and our family find justice. I was never going to give up.
You've created hope. The Yogurt Shop murder will always be part of Austin's history. The pain from that night and its aftermath will never go away. But with the knowledge we have now, we can share some peace. God bless Amy, Jennifer, Sarah, and Eliza. They will always be a part of our city's identity.
Well, every year the software doesn't, I'd probably pass that to the ATF about how often we should be resubmitting stuff. They have made, it's been a big push by the ATF lately that software has gotten so much better just recently. And this goes out across the country. You know, if you've got old shell casings, resubmit them to NIBIN. We are getting hits in other cases already, just from a lot. So the approach I took for this case was a different approach than have been taken before. My goal was to look at all the evidence. What evidence do I have and what can I do with it? As technology gets better, you know, you constantly reevaluate your cases and, you know, go back into the, you know, go back into the vault and find out where that evidence is and make sure you actually still have it and do stuff with it. I took the approach of, I'm not going to listen to the confessions. I've never listened to them. I've never read them, the transcripts. And that should be the goal of every cold case. It occurred in 1990, and it was solved in 2018.
Let's pause.
We know the gun he got stopped in.
And I think that's a big thing that's going on now. And it should give every person who's gotten away with your shit forever some pause. Because, the technology has gotten pretty freaking amazing. And a lot of it, people who haven't been caught, it's not because the evidence doesn't exist. It's because it hasn't been run into the databases yet. And I hope that there is concerted efforts on the part of all these, every department across the country, to get that data into these databases, because once that happens, then things can be connected, things can be linked up, and answers can be found. I wonder if in some areas, I know in some areas they do have like volunteer groups that help with this sort of thing, because it is a daunting task. You're talking decades of material that needs to essentially be cataloged into a system that can then do its matching job. But I would encourage anyone, if you're passionate about this and want to see more cases like this and justice brought to more victims, reach out to your local departments and say, hey, can I help in any way? Because many do look for volunteers and things like this, and there's not enough people out there to do all of it. And that manpower, unfortunately, becomes the big thing, and funding, because if they're looking for volunteers, it means they have no money to pay anybody for some of it. But the satisfaction and the justice that can be brought by re-examining evidence in so many of these cold cases is stunning. I mean, look what it led to here. And that was because somebody said, rerun this. The evidence has been sitting there for quite some time, but it was finally rerun because somebody took the time to do it, because somebody remembered it. And they found it. So pretty amazing what that sort of technology can do.
It's heartening. It's also very sad to see the victims' family members, but also the people involved with the investigation. This was something they were very passionate about. It was something that moved them very deeply. Obviously, the girls losing their lives and the many years that this case was cold, it touched that community. And Austin is one of those communities. It's very progressive. It's kind of a party place now. But back then, it was just another town in Texas when this all took place.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.